comedy podcast, comedy podcast. Get your ass ready for a comedy podcast.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths.
Comedy podcast, comedy podcast. A certified motherfucking comedy podcast.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
Get yourself together, it's a certified fucking good time.
Yeah!
Gooner Army, we need your help. We need you to send us money. This may come as a surprise, but podcasting is not a job, and neither is running a car crash death map. We would love to continue to publish new work, new traffic safety research, new and improved car crash maps for Roadway Report. We would love to continue our forays into comedy podcasting. But both of these are taking up an increasing amount of both of our time. And we don't make any money at all from this as of right now, aside from Norman, who sent us $100. Thank you, Norman. If you want to help us out, please go to roadway.report/donate. We'll suck your dick. Do it. roadway.report/donate. Thanks. And don't email my wife. Lucas is like, let's podcast ASAP. So I sit down and I roll. And then he's not in the Zoom. What's the deal, man? The Gooner Army is waiting, Lucas. The Gooner Army is here, waiting. Did you guys see Aurora Borealis? It stopped around down in Austin. We had the Aurora Borealis. I don't know if I've ever said that before. But apparently, it was pretty bright. I didn't even go outside. I should have gone outside. But I was inside on, like, a screen.
The government doesn't want you to see the Northern Lights. They want you to stay on TikTok. And they want you to think about gender identity. But you're not gonna. You're gonna get on that bike and you're gonna ride.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. It's the world's first car crash podcast, and it will remain the world's best, no matter how many there become. Mr. MacGuber, you are needed. Mr. MacGuber is here. Hello. Hello, Lucas. Welcome to the podcast. Are you rolling? Okay, well, I've been rolling for like 6 minutes. Only a handful of hard R's have been included, but I'll cut them out.
Oh my God, listener, are you okay? I know I've left you with him for minutes on end, and I know how you feel when that happens, when I'm not here to dampen the mood and make things less funny, etc. But I'm here. I'm here now. I'm here, and we're going to be okay. We're going to hold hands. We're going to cross the street, and we're going to be okay.
Okay, I just had a moment. I just spit whiskey up through my nose because I was laughing at a joke in my own head.
Grody.
the joke was, it says here on your resume that you're.
Can you explain the gap in your sense that led you to put that on your resume, sir?
But no, I don't even think we can put that in the podcast. It made me laugh so hard that that I spit whiskey through my nose and I almost threw up.
Can you explain this gap in your resume? I just turn around and I squeeze my legs together and I say, can you explain this gap in my thighs?
Yeah. Do you want to make a gap in my boy pussy?
Precisely. And this is why it's easy to be employed.
It says here you are. It says here you want me to decimate your boy pussy? Is that correct?
Yes.
How long have you had a boy pussy?
Well, as long as I can remember.
Ever since I was a boy.
Ever since I was a boy and ever since I had a pussy.
I'm dying, man. I've had a long couple days.
I'm sorry.
I've been with my family. I'm sleeping on a couch.
Oh, you gave your bed to the parents?
Yeah, well, no. I was staying at their, like, Airbnb.
Why? You could have just gone home.
Yeah, but I just was trying to spend time with the gang, right? It's been a long time since the whole family's been together.
Yeah,
one or 2 years.
The photos were really cute.
Yeah, so we had a good time. But we're back. We're back to traffic deaths. No more of that kumbaya shit.
No more riding around in your parents' rental car. I assume you did some of that.
That's actually, you know, to credit Jim and Liz, they only walked everywhere. They took a cab from the airport. They stayed at 12th and Comal. So they were able to walk to the Texas Book Festival.
Oh, excellent.
And walk to, like, all the restaurants and stuff that they wanted to do for the week. So they actually did it upright. It was very urban, their
nice.
Experience.
I appreciate they probably feared your wrath if they chose to navigate the city otherwise.
Well, it was cool that they really enjoyed it, right?
Well, it's better. It's objectively better. Anytime anyone does it, they're like, wow, yeah, wow, this is better. Yeah, no shit.
Well, yeah, they stayed in what was once a thriving black community.
Excellent.
And it's now almost unrecognizable.
They stayed on the east side, or?
Yeah, they stayed, like, right in the heart of the historic, of one of Austin's, like, historic black communities. And, like, what a lot of people would argue is the main one, just because most of them were consolidated to pretty much right there.
Yeah.
In the 30s.
Over by the ballpark, right?
Yeah, but they were closer to the city.
Right. In from there. Yeah, west of there.
Ooh. No, it's so sad thinking about how much harder it is to get to the city from the east side as a result of our transportation engineering choices. It's like the infrastructure does provide benefit to a lot of people, but it doesn't for everybody. It's not like everybody can access the infrastructure. And it's monumental, the barriers that it creates to people just as people, as well as, like, all wildlife.
Yeah. All of God's creatures, all of the lovely critters.
All of God's creatures except Susan.
Except Susan and her CRV.
Right. Fuck,
yeah,
man.
Well, and they're expanding I-35, right? They're going to make it even harder to cross. I'm sure there will be multimodal improvements.
It says here on your resume that you're... What do you mean by that?
You're really just making the editing task harder for yourself today.
I promise I won't let one slip by. There's certain things you can't do in podcasting. First rule of podcasting, smoke weed every day. Second rule of podcasting, no bummers.
Is that like a French accent? Like, is that... I am...
Oui, oui.
You're like a Texan from France. You're like a French Texan.
Have you heard about the new traffic death maps?
Oh, yeah. They're coming hot off the presses day after day. Ben's fingers have been bloody.
Maps, charts, graphs, traffic deaths. Lots and lots of traffic deaths. More and more every day. It's what you want. It's what we've got.
Yeah.
We're trying to publish injury data, right? You got the death map, but the death map doesn't really do justice to the amount of violence caused by this system. So when you're able to plot, like, people who are disabled in car crashes, in addition to people who died in car crashes, it gives a slightly clearer picture of which streets and intersections are what you would describe as problem areas. So it's important that we're able to start publishing more detailed maps And we're just doing that on a state-by-state basis wherever possible, starting with the largest states first. So we've done roadway.report/Colorado/Texas/California. We've got something like 20% of the U.S. We're trying to do New York and Florida. We've got public information requests submitted. I'm doing Pennsylvania right now because they're the next largest
publicly available.
State
yeah. I mean, it seems like this is a recurrent trend. The more that we also talk with potential partners in this work and other folks that are engaged in this work. I was talking with some folks in Rhode Island this week, and they reached out to RIDOT, the Rhode Island Department of Transportation, and they sort of stonewalled them and were like, no, why would you want access to this data? And they kind of went out of their way and have built their own data sets from other local reporting mechanisms, and actually they were able to collaborate with the police office. The police were more willing than the state government transportation agency to collaborate with a group that's trying to decrease death on the streets, which I think is pretty wild. I'm excited to talk more with them to find out more about the quality of RIDOT's refusal, but it's just amazing that these agencies that prop themselves up as experts are often the biggest obstructions to this data. And I give kudos to states like Pennsylvania that make this data publicly available because it's important. And like, in order to have a grassroots movement, we need to have data and reality to point to that we can say, we need to change this street. We need to take space away from cars on this corner. And so I'm really excited. If you go to roadway.report/just the state name, you can see the injury data. So roadway.report/Texas, roadway.report/California, roadway.report/Colorado, and more to come very soon. If you want us to bump your state up on the list because you're doing some important work that would be aided by this type of visualization and this kind of data, let us know. Like, we're hungry to do that. We want to help you.
Okay, yeah, but you got to kick us a little extra, something extra, if you want do your state before the big ones. Okay, you can't be from North Dakota and be like, hey man, no, actually no. If you are from North Dakota, we'll do yours for free. But everybody else, you got to kick us a little something.
Obviously, we're in this. We're spending a lot of time making this happen. So we're excited to collaborate. But of course, like we need to be, included in the benefits of this.
Who am I kidding? They don't have to pay us. We just want to help.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even mean like help. Send us one of your t-shirts. Like, put our name on your website. Like, post about us on social media.
Put our maps on your
tattoo
website.
Our maps on your buttocks.
Safe street. If you're like a safe streets person or a Vision Zero person, or you're one of those guys who wears tights, put our map on your website.
Put our map on your body.
Yeah, put me on your body. Let me put some whipped cream on them titties. Waiter, do you have any whipped cream?
My girlfriend is definitely busty, wouldn't you say? Come on, waiter. Tell me what you think about her breasts.
Waiter, would you say they're the largest breasts you've ever seen?
Oh, you do? Then you better bring me some whipped cream on the double.
How much whipped cream do you have back there? Is there a cream boy whipping it?
Is there a limit to the amount of cream you could provide me, boy?
Do you need a cream boy to whip the cream? Or do you whip it yourself, cream boy?
Answer me, or I'll go get my CRV and I'll drive it through the dining room.
Waiter, my gay son is so hungry. He's famished from a long day of TikTok. Will you bring him a little boy's menu? Waiter.
They pay you to take care of me and my gay son, don't they?
Please, I need water with lemons in it.
How's the real life restaurant been? You've been putting a lot of lemons in water.
I'm counting the days. I'm counting the minutes until it's done.
Do you have a sunset, or are you going to train for that thing?
Yeah, it all appears to be in motion. So
let's go.
I don't want to jinx it. God, I don't want to jinx it. But it looks like I won't be a waiter for too much longer.
Excellent.
God bless. But I will miss it, man. I will miss being a loser.
Mm-hmm. You are a really effective loser. And I feel like, you know, as you shout at cars and swerve in front of them on your bicycle, like it's in line with loserdom. And I respect you as a loser. I don't know if I'll respect you as a 9-to-5-er. I mean, time will tell.
Look, I've always been a winner deep down, but I've been losing, and it's time to win. It's time
to win. The government can't stop us. The government hates the people, but the people will be free.
Ain't that the truth? The government really like does hate us. Yeah. That's all I got.
It's so sad. It's tragic how the hopelessness of being a working person translates into being vulnerable to these reactionary appeals.
Yeah, that's the game plan. That's how they get us. And that's why we will not stop until the Gunnar army takes back the streets in the dead of night.
The dead of night. We will take back the streets.
When Nancy Pelosi is sleeping, we will take back her street.
Street by street, night by night, the government will fall and the Gooners will be free.
They will run rampant on the streets. You won't be able to go a half a city block without encountering an army, a veritable battalion of Gooners standing by to defend freedom at every corner.
Hand in hand, the Gooners will roam freely in the streets at night, in the dead of night.
And at daytime, when the lights are bright, they won't be there. It'll be like business as usual, except there won't be fascists because the Gunnar army has taken back the streets at night. Like this is the plan, listener. You're for those of you that might be like, I don't know about this Gunnar army thing. You're gonna be fine.
What happens? How could we get in trouble if this is just a hypothetical question? Could we get in trouble if we have like a meetup, but the name of the meetup is planning to kidnap the governor?
Yes. Yeah.
Are you sure? It's like a public Facebook event. It's like we kidnap the governor.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that one would probably get flagged.
And then no, but the whole Gunnar army will be there because it's satire, and it's clearly satire, right? I don't think any reasonable person would assume otherwise.
I think that we are beyond the realm of reasonable people deciding based on logic and truth, way that people are treated. It doesn't matter. Like, yeah, I really appreciate it. I love making this podcast, and I love being a lieutenant in the Gunnar army because it's fun, and it is satirical, and it is a way to battle in the arena of ideas in a way that is better than like, well, we need to make the streets safer because people are dying, and that's just shit. That shit just isn't working. Like, it obviously doesn't work. And so I really appreciate getting to play with language and ideas the way that we do. But in terms of being persecuted, like, if we put ourselves out there, I think there's like a line to walk. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's a new line. I'm not saying that it's the line between politeness and political correctness and the opposite, but there is like some line that needs to be walked. And I do think that you're on it by saying that it needs to be the most satirical. It needs to be clearly satirical.
You can say, okay. So I was doing a little reading on some stuff that the ACLU has tried before, because they're doing all sorts of legal mumbo jumbo. people saying stuff they shouldn't say, people doing stuff they shouldn't do. But bam, it's the ACLU. We're here to help. So you can call for the overthrow of the American government. You can be like, we should overthrow the American government. Maybe that's not
I've quoted Lincoln to the same effect on this podcast. It was his first inaugural address to Congress and the American people, where he said that the American citizens have a constitutional right, their revolutionary right, to overthrow or dismember the government.
Yeah, aren't there a few we'd all like to dismember? But no, I don't think you're allowed to specifically call for the death of, like, Jimmy. You can't be like, that guy, let's kill that guy. Like, that's a no-go. You can't do that.
Well, we've reached a place where, I mean, like, the law, the, like, law of the land is not in power right now. Like, these folks, like, put themselves up. And, yeah, I definitely warrant that the law still has teeth. Obviously, for the incarcerated population of our country, like, it would be remiss not to say that, right? But right now, especially in the realm of ideas and in the realm of politics and sociology, for lack of a better way of putting it, like, they will do whatever the fuck they want to whomever they want. They are disappearing people off the streets for no reason with no prior cause, just because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time and their skin is the wrong color. Like, it is a slippery slope for them locking us up because we run this thing called the Gooner Army. You know what I mean? Like,
no, but the Gooner Army, first of all, the Gooner Army will be free. Free speech. What's the deal?
Yeah. I completely agree. I just think that these people are evil. Like, they're evil idiots hellbent on ushering in a new organization of wealth that is even worse than the last era, that is somehow worse than neoliberalism, as we approach an era where we are going to have to, like, scale back on some comforts. Like, it's just a necessity for our globe to scale back on some comforts for, you know, a sizable portion of the population. This is coming, but instead of, like, bracing and holding on to each other and finding a way to make this work together and to take a step like they did in the 1840s in Europe and throw off feudalism and try to invent democracy, they're trying to invent something else. And we need to invent the democracy of the 21st century. And I don't know what the fuck that is, but that's the challenge in my view.
You sound like David Brooks. You sound like David Brooks on PBS NewsHour.
Hell yeah.
That's not a compliment.
Well, you know. Which
no,
one is...
No, fuck, we've... What, fuck, we've got to invent a new democracy. We've got to take back the streets in the dead of night.
That's what I'm saying, Ben. I'm not saying that democracy is the answer. I'm saying we need a new civic development on the scale of democracy against feudalism.
No, and it's not against the law to say that the American government is probably toast, right? I mean, like, come on, man.
Again, no, it's not against the law. But again, the law isn't the thing that has teeth right now. The thing with teeth are the dogs that have power.
We all have power, dog.
Hell yeah. I agree, but I'm not saying that democracy is the answer. We need to save our democracy, because that's stupid at this point. And it's,
I don't know, man.
It's a neoliberal trap. It's a trap to get people to accept that the Democrats continue to stand in as the leftist party in this country, which is a just outright lie. I'm not saying what you accused me of saying, and I have to stand my ground on that.
There's a few beautiful things about this country. And I think the best one really is, like, the government more or less will not persecute you for having an opinion. I mean, obviously there's a huge history of covert operations of people getting capped for you know, being revolutionary. So in some sense, yes, the government will kill you for having the wrong opinion, but a lot of people do get away with it. I guess, like, views that are considered taboo or, you can sort of just like it all goes back to Alex Jones and the fact that like if you own the distribution.
Yeah, and I mean taking it.
You can control your life, like you can reach the people here and you can say whatever you want. I do like that about our country. And I don't necessarily think that's under threat. I do think my coworkers are under threat, but
yeah, and that freedom for them is under threat. And if the freedom for someone else is under threat, my freedom is under threat. Like that, it is a slippery slope to that point. Taking it, I think another step, beyond Alex Jones, and I agree with everything you said. But thinking about the formation of what became American Republican democracy, a good deal of that was decentralized, township-based, local governments that you might describe as being somewhat like communist. And I'm talking about like congregationalist towns in New England. And granted, you know, they weren't always the best. They burned some witches. They were, you know, pushing for Christian ideals that were often quite violent. But at the end of the day, like it was those townships that formed the like basic building blocks of government that became the United States government. And it was the autonomy of the local group and the autonomy of the individual that I think this country was founded on. And I think that's a beautiful thing. They were running away from religious persecution, say what you will about their beliefs. And this country was founded on the idea that you can say whatever you want. And we should extend those rights to as many people as possible.
I think this country was founded on the idea that we should get rid of them Native Americans.
I would say the country wasn't founded on that idea, but it was. It wouldn't exist without that idea. That was a necessary step in the formation of the empire that this nation became. Absolutely.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know. I hesitate to say anything positive about the founding fathers' vision of this United States.
I think that we have to mine our past, which is rife with violence and colonialism and racism and sexism, for the lights that were shining. Because if we wholesale think that everything that was created was bad, what are we fighting for? I don't know,
because there's a lot of things that do work about American democracy, right? It's at times been pretty functional in American history. Shit has been per person. I mean, if you want to measure it in terms of dollars, yeah, per person, the distribution of wealth has been pretty decent. It's been something of an anomaly in the history of the world.
Well, it's because it was founded on, it was a colonial power. It was an expansive government, and it functioned because the government could continue to expand to admit more members, which continued to give more and more people agency. Like, it did actually expand agency at the violence and the murder and the genocide of Native peoples and the, you know, obviously slavery, obviously the treatment of Mexicans, people of Mexican descent after the, you know, West expansion continued. And it was successful because, I mean, like Rome, it was constantly expanding. And so franchise could be given to more and more people because more and more resources were being claimed. And we're still at the same shit. We're trying to do the same shit in the Middle East, we're trying to do the same shit in South America. Like, it's the same game plan to take over the entire world. And if we keep taking over the entire world, maybe we can maintain some sort of stability for what it means to be a prosperous middle-class American at the suffering of the rest of the world's population. But I hope that isn't the path.
I think you're spot on. You're spot on. It's built on the backs of lots of third world labor, but boy does it feel good. It has to come crashing down eventually, right? I think a lot of the squeeze that people feel I think a lot of white people are feeling the squeeze for the first time since the Great Depression.
Right.
And I don't think it's going well for them. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that, like, with Zoom and Slack, there's nothing stopping you from having to compete with the global talent market. So you've really got to be the best.
And there's less freedom because there are fewer opportunities for you to be completely away from work. There's an assumption that can be built that you should be able to jump on a call or respond to an email 24/7. And Atma, who lives in India with his 9 siblings and is just trying to get out and make a different life for himself and maybe send some money home to his family, he's going to do that. Like, he's going to be on the clock 24/7 in a way that I'm not, because I have hobbies and I can go ride my bicycle and I have, you know, an endless supply of food. I do have the comfort of a middle-class American.
Right. And I have my comforts. I have my goon cave. I have my 3 monitors. I have I have an alternator and a car battery that I hook up to my genitals, and I just blast it. I call it 8, 8, and 8. It's 8 hours of work, 8 hours of gooning, and 8 hours of sleep. And I sort of just eat protein bars. And because I just eat protein bars, I never poop.
I was going to say, when is the last time you took a dump?
I just pee in bottles. Even at work, I just pee in bottles. But life is good, man. Life is good. I think the simple things are what makes us happy.
Wow. Yeah. That's one way to look at it. But yeah, no, I mean, I'm hot on it because, and I think it's relevant to our podcast, and I have a couple of items I want to bring up that are more on our beat. I know we've gotten a little off the rails here, but I'm hot on it because, like, we all want the same things. We all want the same things, and I just want to take care of the people in my life and have some comfort, and I want as many people to have that as possible, and I want to live in a community where I can walk across the street and not worry about that, where my wife can walk across the street and I don't have to worry about her getting maimed, seriously injured, or killed. And where the folks who don't have the comfort of an automobile and cables to strap to their dick and endless supply of bottles to pee in and Cliff Bars to eat, I want those people to sacrifice a little bit of comfort at the hands of people that don't have anything. And if we do that and the whole equation writes itself, fewer people will be driving cars, fewer people will be hit by cars, and that'll just be one part of the whole utopian vision, right? So if you can do the small things to use up less and consume fewer resources so that those resources are available to other people in your community, especially now when people don't know where their fucking next meal is coming from when they're on food stamps, right? It's really, really, really messed up. And we just have to try to take care of people when we see them in our daily lives. I think that's like the only salient advice.
No, I've been buying food stamps. I've been buying food stamps for cash. I tell people I'll give them 50 cents on the dollar, and I buy their food stamps. And then I go to HEB and I spend them.
A gentleman and a scholar.
It's called market arbitrage. You know, you take advantage of low-income people because they don't realize how good an opportunity. They don't realize how good a deal I'm getting. Waiter, I'd like to pay with food stamps.
That's fine, sir. You can pay with EBT.
You can't buy a hot meal of food stamps.
Well, we can make it work.
Not a lot of people know that. You're only allowed to get chips.
Yeah, chips and soda, I believe.
So that's a fucked up joke.
Yeah. No, obviously. Yeah. The listener knows where
we
are.
No, I mean, it's horrible. It's horrible. I haven't even been thinking about it because it's not a part of my life. But I'm sure if that program were a major part of my life, I'd be pretty upset about the government shutdown.
Yeah, or if it was a part of your mom's life and instead she was asking you for $400, you know?
So, yeah, but that's the thing. It's like if this whole operation is so fucking corrupt, right, and everybody hates the fucking government, like all normal people hate the government, what do we do? How do we, like, permanently shut down the government while maintaining a necessary level of mutual aid to, you know, have a just and functioning society?
Well, I think historically it requires violence, and I think it would require local networks of support. I don't think that this is like a national conversation. I think that the country will splinter. I don't think it'll be like an overthrow all at once of every single state government and federal government all at once. I think there'll be stages.
I think an army of gooners will take back the streets.
Well, obviously. I think as long as we keep making this podcast, we're going to right all of the world's wrongs.
I think on the night of Christmas Eve, an army of gooners all over the nation will take back the streets in the dead of night. It gets more specific the more podcasts we do.
Yeah, Christmas Eve.
On the night of Christmas Eve, an army of gooners will take back the streets all over the nation all at the same time. It doesn't have as good of a ring to it.
An army of gooners will take back the streets in the dead of night.
On Christmas Eve.
I don't know. Like, I feel like Santa's got that one locked down. Like, I feel like there's too much overlap with Santa worship and the gooner army.
What if we take it back on 9/11? Well, no, because, but I feel like if we are, our slogan is we're taking back 9/11, it becomes about that, and it's not about taking back the streets anymore.
I like the equinox. I like the spring equinox. You're too straight for that.
There's people who have that day already.
Yeah. Well, we all have that day. Daylight taking back time. I'm so pissed off at the fucking daylight savings time. I think I could handle it. I think my mental health would be better if I could gradually enjoy the days getting shorter. But when I finish my work and it's already been dark for an hour and a half, like it just takes a toll. I've been feeling the winter blues. I've been a little mentally ill the last couple of days. I finally broke through it last night. I cleaned my office.
The only solution, and it sucks because it's hard, is to
wake up early. Yeah.
Yeah. It's because it's miserable.
But waiter,
It will help.
Waiter, my gay son prefers to sleep in the mornings before he has his deviled eggs. Can you have his deviled eggs ready when he is waking up?
Yeah. Yes. My gay son has depression. He can't wake up before 7 a.m. No, that's too early for depression. My gay son has depression. He can't wake up until 11 a.m. that's more right.
I need you to serve breakfast at least until 1 o'clock so he can have his deviled eggs.
Do you have brunch? Perhaps brunch will do.
I got a couple of, I don't know, onbeat topics, not necessarily transportation news.
Talk to me. Give me the traffic deaths content.
I wanted to ask you if we wanted to consider adding some statistics as we, you know, put it on the list, right? Right now, state injury data is biggest fish to fry, plus any maps that the listeners want us to make and want to pay us extravagantly to do so. Obviously, those are high priority. But beyond that, I've been thinking a lot, and I was watching a story recently, I think it was just on social media or whatever, but there was a report about road rage shootings, and I wondered if that was relevant to our beat about people who, in the context of like traffic anger, you know, road rage, get out of their cars or from the comfort of their big squishy motor vehicles, they kill people with their guns. It feels like concurrent with like the mission of Roadway Report? Like, what do you think? What do you think the overlap is for roadway deaths and road rage shootings? Are road rage shootings roadway deaths? Are they traffic deaths?
Yes. Yes. A resounding yes. Because they are deaths that would otherwise have not occurred if we didn't live in this idiotic hell world. However, for every road rage shooting, there's 100 traffic deaths. So that's why we don't really focus on them.
Well, of course we don't focus on them. And again, down the line. But they are, I think they're a way for people to understand the violence behind traffic, behind using an automobile, right? Because it's like the tip of the iceberg. It also calls into question, and, you know, I mean, we've said this on the podcast before, but the easiest way to get away with murder in this country is to use your car to do it and claim it was an accident, because those people are rarely persecuted, prosecuted.
It's so simple. And no one says this. I don't know why no one says this, but like, if you just say, I didn't mean to do it, there is almost, and you don't have any alcohol in your system, you just won't get in trouble.
Yeah, they might give you free therapy.
You might be held financially liable. And yeah, everyone will like sympathize with you. Everyone will be like, oh my God, what the fuck? I can't imagine what it would have been like to see that homeless person explode.
You poor baby. Yeah, exactly.
Instead of like, man, that must have been a bad day for that hobo. God, people are so whack.
People are whack-a-doodle.
They're so cucked. They're so cucked by the Ford Motor Company that they can't imagine what it's like to not be in a cage. And I hate them. Oh, this bitter podcast is brought to you by Roadway Report, the only map of every traffic death in America. Go to roadway.report. It's a map of every traffic death in America.
Good army, are you ready to take back the
Christmas
streets?
Eve is coming.
Are you ready to overthrow the American government? Are you ready to kidnap the governor? Well, we're coming to your town. We need you to send us money today.
We are investing in a fund so we can buy a bunch of Santa costumes to clothe the Gooner Army for our Christmas Eve assault on all things evil and...
Yeah, on Christmas Eve, we take back the streets.
On Christmas Eve.
They won't know what.
I feel like Christmas is the right idea, at least Dickensian Christmas, right? Because Dickens really invented Christmas. And the story of A Christmas Carol, it drives me crazy. I feel the same way about Les Miserables, right? Like, it's $90 to go see it, or maybe Christmas Carol, you know, you get like a rush ticket for maybe $45 here in Denver. But you have to go to the expensive theater. It's like clearly a classed event, right? Like, it's an event for one class of person. And then the story that you get is one of redemption, of someone who realizes that like hoarding wealth is wrong and being unkind is wrong, but you can be redeemed as long as you change in your heart and you decide to share your wealth and your goodness with your community and with the people in your daily walk. And people walk out of the play and they pat themselves on the back and they say, oh, I love that story. I love that story. As they walk by, like, a homeless person on the street, and maybe they give him a dollar once, but like, I just can't stand the way that rich people love Les Miserables. It's my cross to bear. Like, to
why don't you like Les Mis?
Because
Valjean.
Because it's like so. It gets to the heart of, I think, the things that divide us and at the inequality in our world, and it satiates a sense of morality by simulating it by our support of Jean Valjean, right? As opposed to actually taking back the streets in the dead of night on Christmas Eve.
I have this theory about our cultural understanding of like justice and how America is a place where that gets better over time. And I mean, it's hard to argue that we haven't made really substantial changes in racial civil rights like gender rights in this country,
sure,
gay rights. But it's like there have been times in this country where we took a hard turn in the wrong direction. Like the racial climate was better in 1875 than it was in 1910, if that makes sense. Like the legal apparatuses really codified a lot of racist legislation at the turn of the 20th century that maybe hadn't had the time or the power to do under Reconstruction. We took such a hard right-wing turn in the Jim Crow era. Before we had the civil rights movement of the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
And I think there is some truth to the fact that everything, at least in political and historical senses, move in cycles, and there are times of backsliding and times of progress. I think that that's just true.
And you think of how a lot of the socialist revolutionaries of the 1800s were in response to, like, I mean, the Rockefellers, right? Like when, or the 20s, when did those guys get busy?
The socialists? We have to look at the Bolsheviks and we have to look at what was happening in Russia as sort of like a global barometer, right? But the first Red Scare in the United States was essentially immediately on the heels of World War One, when they started throwing people in jail just for what they were saying. And they really started cracking down on anything that was considered un-American. I have a play about this. You can read it on my Substack, which is Lucas's Little Library. It's a play that's about Iowa in both the late 1870s and the early 1920s. It's a generational story about like the land and the theft of the land and then the building of a college there. And the college is sort of under the gun for funding because they won't fire this socialist professor, and this professor that's standing up for the rights of these students who were imprisoned because they were protesting for Indian sovereignty, and I mean East Indian sovereignty, when the revolution was happening to throw off the Raj in India. They were demonstrating, and this was happening in the United States, they were throwing people in jail for protesting India's form of government because it was considered un-American. So anyway, I'm really passionate about this time period, and I think you're spot on investigating it and talking about it this way, because I think that they purposefully don't like teach us about these things because they want us to have this sense of history that is always bending towards the always arcing towards good, right?
Right. Yeah. What's the MLK quote? Let's read that.
Yeah.
Back.
It's when is it?
The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. And I guess in the age of climate change, right? And the point is that it's hard to argue this in the modern day. Like, it's hard to look at the world around us and see the effects of the urban environment on wildlife and see there's microplastics in our fucking penis and the ocean is full of plastic. And it feels like just about everything is going to shit and humans are destroying ourselves. And I guess it's hard to believe this. Things have gotten better in the past. You know, we've done a lot of cool stuff as a human race. But man, it feels like it just might not be bending towards justice.
Waiter, the arc of my gay son's appetite is long, but it bends towards bussy. Could you tell me about yours?
Lucas's little library? Lucas's little boy pussy.
Oh, but no, like, people should be doing my play because, like, they're throwing people in jail again for no reason. They're disappearing people off the streets just for what they think and what they say. They're firing college professors left and right for their ideological. The play, it's an original play by Susan Glassbell. It was written in 1920. I have an adaptation of it. So if you're interested in reading it, listener, you can go to my Substack. The first act is there. Or you can reach out to me, lucas@roadway.report, and we could talk about it. I'm eager to talk about it.
They know. They can tell.
Waiter, this man is bothering me. Do you think you could exclude him, put him in some sort of ghetto?
Oh, no. Yeah, they are like that.
Right.
Waiter, there's a poor person in the restaurant. Could you ask them to
Could
leave?
You shoot them? The other...
Waiter, that man asked me for change. Could you shoot him?
The other thing that I wanted to talk about today, which we've touched on in the podcast, but we haven't really gone directly into it as a subject, is vehicular biking, vehicular cycling, and particularly John Forrester as a figure. He wrote Effective Cycling and Bicycle Transportation, and he was fighting against the movement of planning agencies to essentially segregate bike paths on the Dutch style, right? And so there's a lot to be considered here in terms of, like, who's right, who's wrong, because his argument was always, if they segregate us to the bad roads, if they don't let us use the quote-unquote good roads, we're never going to be safe. So we have to keep biking as fast as possible. We have to keep acting like we're cars. The only safe way to operate a bicycle is to act like you're a car and be as aggressive and fast as possible. And I just wanted to know what your take on him and this was, because it's really fascinating, and I think if we had followed his line of thinking, we might have a very different set of infrastructure in the United States.
Well, it's tragic. It's tragic. I mean, from what you say, I don't really know a lot about this guy, but I mean, it really couldn't be further from the truth, right? Building streets that have modal filters, just like calm, thin streets. That shit works, man. That shit's safe as shit.
He was the king of the Lycra boys. He basically, like, said that if you didn't wear Lycra and you didn't have a bent over bicycle with the fucking loopy, you know, if you didn't have a proper road bike and you didn't know how to ride it as fast as humanly possible.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. Even me, Lightning McQueen. I'm not even that fast. I don't love riding in traffic. I don't love riding at high speeds. So, like, I consider myself pretty capable, you know, and experienced. But I don't know. Every single day there's a moment where I don't feel safe.
Absolutely.
Every single day.
Yeah. I would say if you have some time.
So I think that guy's a fucking dick. Fuck him. Fuck his shit. We don't need him. Glad he's dead. And yeah, he couldn't have been more wrong.
Heck yeah. I mean,
we have so much work to do as a result of that line of thinking, right? There's all this infrastructure that we spent money on that's just horse shit.
Yeah. Well, and he was always accusing the people trying to fund bike lanes of, like, secretly serving the car lobby. But of course, there's a line of thinking that says he was secretly in the pockets of the car lobby, and he produced these.
Well, he obviously is, because obviously he's a cuck for Big Ford.
I can empathize. I can empathize. I mean, not just bikes. The YouTube channel just did kind of a deep dive on it. That's why it's fresh on my brain. So shout out to those guys. They're, you know, a little, like, Dutch crazy, and I guess we should be, right? But you know, I don't always love their videos, but I watched this one, and it went into kind of the history of the development of this thinking, and particularly as the data has come in over the last, you know, even 40, 50 years, that, you know, modal filters and making space for dedicated space for bicycles and pedestrians and, you know, multimodal means of transit, and taking space away from cars is the only way to make things safer. Like in the overwhelming like data of that, the fact that he didn't relent is a testament to his cuckedness and his service to the car lobby. However, I can appreciate, like, he was a guy that, like, loved racing bikes with his friends, right? And he thought that if he was forced off the road, he saw his right to the road as, you know, maybe a risk, but a privilege, right? And something that he was scared that they were, that the government was going to take away from him. And I feel like someone that might not know a ton about this might associate us with his line of thinking. And I think that it's important to separate ourselves from it. I appreciated your response off the get. But at the same time, I do have a little bit of empathy. Like, I can put myself in his shoes, at least on the beginning, like, before we have all the data, right? To say, like, oh, they're going to force us off the street. Like, I don't know. I don't know. If the only other option is to ride on the sidewalk.
I have no empathy for someone who moved the needle towards more death and injury for cyclists and pedestrians.
Hell yeah. And, you know, I like to think things through. And I don't have sympathy, right? But I can empathize with people's positions. I think it's important that we empathize with those that we detest.
No, it's true, yeah. We can all come together and goon, but not anytime soon.
Not anytime soon. Not until Christmas Eve.
Eve, we all will take back the streets, hand in hand, dick out. Christmas Eve. You and me, you and me, Lucas, Christmas Eve, hand in hand, dick out, right in the road.
Right in every road in America, with you, listener, soldier.
Yeah, okay. Do you have any other transportation content?
I don't. I do have some John Forrester quotes that I want to read, though. I just think it's funny in context of our podcast. It's just been sitting with me. He said, let's see... fuck it. I'm tossing it out. I'm not ready. I will be ready in a week to talk about it, but my thoughts aren't formed. I have talked so much this week. I got switched to some end user training at work instead of like code workbook support, which is much more like technical and slow. Instead, I had to like present on Zoom to 35 silent people all week. So my like brain is getting tired on the communication front.
Yeah, this is fascinating, man. But it's like, okay, maybe he was acting in earnest, right? But obviously, this is so bad for society. God.
Yeah, it's sad, right? God. Could you imagine like dedicating yourself and like writing books in the support of something that you believed in? And then, like, having the overwhelming data by the end of your life indicating that everything that you said was, like, absolutely wrong and violent and supportive of a system that just is brutally violent and fatal. Like, it would be a trip to, like, have gotten that wrong. Like, what if that happens to us?
No, we are right. We have the death map. We have the data, baby.
We do got the data.
And there's never been anything wrong with data collection, especially when cops do it. So I'm sure it's all there. I'm sure it's all right. I'm sure it's all perfect. I'm sure there's no deaths missing. I'm sure there's no murders. I'm sure there's no issues at all.
Exactly. And so no reason for the Gunner army to take back the streets on Christmas Eve in the dead of the night?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess that's it. I guess that's the end of the podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for coming along for the ride. I guess this is the last one.
The last podcast?
Yeah, I mean, you just said it. There's no reason for the Gunner army to take back the streets in the dead of the night on Christmas Eve. So what are we doing here?
No, I guess you're right. I guess that's it. It's been great, man. You know I love you.
Yeah.
I love the Gunner army. Our loyal army of degenerate porno addicts.
Which realistically must be like six people who don't identify as Gooners, who are not pornography addicts, who are like sort of hanging on despite all of the insanity. They must find us cute.
No, I think that it's the Gooners who want to feel seen. I think that's our core target market.
That just can't be true.
I think there has to be at least one Gooner. One bona fide Gooner.
He will be our king. Or it could be a Goonette, I guess.
It's probably Nolan? What's his name? What was his name? The guy?
I mean, we should remember this. I mean, he's our most dedicated follower.
Norman.
You sent him a shirt, right?
Norman. No.
You got to send him a shirt.
You know, you're right. You're right.
Norman, send us your address. We're going to send you a shirt and nothing else.
Norman, send us your address. You need to help us kidnap the governor.
Oh.
That's a wrap, folks. Thanks for gooning with us. We will see you next week.
Yeah, as always, navigate to roadway.report, https://roadway.report. There's a lot to explore there. You can also contribute to our cause if you are so interested in supporting us.
Go to roadway.report/donate.
Yeah, or I would say go to the merch store. The merch store is really good. There's some really good shirts. And that way you get something out of it, too, as opposed to just, like, feeling like you relieve yourself of this, like, piteous feeling you have towards us. At least you get a T-shirt out of it. So do that. Go comment. Go record an obituary of a traffic death in your neighborhood on the map. Like, take care of yourself. Take care of your family. And we'll see you on Christmas Eve.
Gooners out.
The government hates the people, but the people will be free. I'm Gooner McGoober, host of Gooner Wars. I'm Gooner McGoober, host of Gooner Wars, and I'm coming to you straight from the Goon Cave.
Comedy podcast, get your ass ready for a comedy podcast
about roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths.
Comedy podcast, a certified motherfucking comedy podcast
about roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths?
About roadway deaths.
About roadway deaths.
Get yourself together, it's a certified fucking good time. Yeah!